Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Brian E. Roach and Zach Meckler.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Brian E. Roach, just like the Ohio State University. Yes, we are exactly the same thing. I am just like a big, giant, sprawling campus, sadly. Anyway, today, my cohort, my partner in crime, has fled the vicinity. Joe Kuzma is out and about in the wild. Be wary, all you people, in case you encounter a wild Kuzma. So to help me as we continue positional breakdowns, we welcome back to the podcast after a lengthy break, the professor of football himself, Zach Meckler. Zach, how you doing today?
Well, it's great to be back on here after, like you said, quite a little bit away. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back in this one of things.
Yeah, you needed to, you do a lot of pre-draft stuff, and I know you're already looking at the 2020 draft, and draft is your life. You've said often, and I don't hold it against you, that the draft is more exciting than the season. But, so you deserve a little downtime after the draft is over.
I appreciate the consideration.
Now, since we haven't had a chance to talk about it, and before we jump into the topic of the day, let me get your evaluation of the Steelers draft, understanding, of course, that no draft evaluation is really feasible or possible until 4 or 5 years down the road as to how successful it is. But, what are your feelings about how the Steelers made out this year?
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked me for grades, and I'm not a big fan on grading things because I have my personal biases when it comes into, a player I might not like very much turns out to be a good player. So me giving him a D grade or an F grade when reality turns into an A grade, that's why I think, you said it's kind of asinine to hand out grades. But I feel pretty good about the overall Steelers haul. You know, I think they were very gung-ho and adamant about their wanting to get up to get Devin Bush, and I think that's going to be a move that pays big dividends. And honestly, I've had this feeling for a while. You know, I'd rather the Steelers swing and miss on Devin Bush and him turn into a bust, and at least they were aggressive and went up and got a guy that they wanted, rather than sitting back for a guy and having him turn into another Jarvis Jones or an Artie Burns type situation. So I was certainly happy with their ability to go up and get a guy that they think, and as most fans should think, come in there and really kind of set the tone there. Because I don't think they need to replace Ryan Shazier. They just need a playmaker that they haven't really had since Shazier has been gone. I think Devin Bush can be that guy. But, I think they got great value with Justin Lane in the third round. I had a first-round grade on him. Borderline first round grade. I think him being there in the third round is crazy to me. And Deontay Johnson, I think he's going to turn some heads this year. I think he is more pro ready for the NFL right now than a lot of other receivers they've taken on are, just due to his route running, his skills, his versatility. I think he'll make some spots for him to kind of get in there and make some splashes on the Steelers offense. And a pick I think a lot of people are excited about, but Benny Snell I think is a really, really underrated pick. I think thinking about a defense being worn down with the run game, so I think the Steelers are going to go back to hopefully a more balanced attack. If I'm a defense, I don't want to have to face James Conner and Benny Snell over and over and over again, because you have one battering ram and then you have another battering ram. That's an easy way to tear down defenses and wear them out, and I think that'll end up boding very well for Pittsburgh. And I just think the value and the depth they found at the end of the draft, with guys like Sutton Smith and, I think Ulysses Gilbert is a better player and better prospect. I think he's a practice squad guy this year, but, he has some potential and upside. And Derwin Gray is a guy that I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to, but don't be surprised if he makes some splashes and makes a push for a back-end roster spot just due to his versatility. So all in all, I think the Steelers, they did a very good job. And I forgot Isaiah Buggs and Zach Gentry, but I think both of them, Buggs is almost a lock, in my opinion, to make the roster unless he comes out and is a bum. But I just think realistically, he actually has a solid shot for pushing for active jersey, active roster spot on game days over McCullers if he ends up showing up the way I think he can. His main issue has just been consistency and putting it all together. So I think he'll be in a good spot to do that. And I think the Steelers did what they needed to do. And I think talking about today's topic, safety was a big issue with a lot of fans, how they didn't select a safety. I think they did enough to address that. I don't think they needed to address safety after they got Devin Bush, because I think Mark Barron and Devin Bush both give them enough versatility, and I think they're confident with their safety group. And then they have some lower, lesser known guys that they brought in here, which I know we'll be talking about here shortly, that I think will make a good impact for them. And I think they have a solid shot at really kind of getting some guys that will be able to contribute either on special teams or in a depth capacity better than I think fans are expecting.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. And having said most of that already over the past odd number of weeks since the draft, I just figured I'd get your take on it. And you teased out our topic of the day, which is the safety group, the second part of the defensive back group. And because you mentioned Artie Burns, and because I know that you have been an Artie Burns truther for a while, I need to ask you, are you still riding that Artie Burns train, or are you starting to head towards the caboose there?
I mean, I see where fans are coming from. I'm not ignorant to the point where I'm not going to admit the fact that I was a little bit wrong. But I think right now, and I'm sure I'll get chewed alive for it, but I think the Artie Burns situation right now, we're going to find out if he can be anything or not. I think the depth the Steelers currently have by bringing in Steven Nelson, drafting Justin Lane, Cam Sutton, they're expecting a lot of good things from. You know, I think realistically, Artie Burns is now or never. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being a trade target for teams that are looking to add some depth, and the Steelers are happy with the other guys they have available. But I think Artie Burns has flashed enough that a team will take a flyer on him, and I'm going to, you know, take it down with me. I'm going to go down swinging and just say it was a lot of a confidence issue, and he hasn't lived up to his draft billing, but we'll see. I'm not ignorant up to the point where I'm not going to admit that I was wrong in my evaluation of Artie Burns coming out, because I liked him more than a lot of people did. I'm hoping, just for the sake of the Steelers, because you can never have too many good corners, I'm hoping for the sake of them he can turn into something, at least in 2019. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's a late training camp casualty that we've seen the Steelers do in so many recent years where they move guys around. So we'll see. But I'm going down swinging in my faith in him.
Now, I mean, I liken him somewhat to Cortez Allen's situation, even though there's probably different reasons for it. But, you know, because I don't necessarily fault your analysis of the player, especially at this corner position. If their confidence goes and they start second guessing, you know, it's a position that you have to play instinctively and with great amount of trust in your ability. And as soon as you break that trust in yourself, you're screwed. Exactly. You know, because you're second guessing everything you see, you're second guessing everything you do. It causes you to hesitate and you don't play naturally. And that's what I think has happened to Artie Burns more than anything else, which is exactly what I think happened to Cortez Allen. And it's not uncommon. The question really, I guess, is does he have the will to and the fortitude of character, so to speak, to find a way to regain that confidence? And that's hard, especially when absolutely nothing went right for Artie Burns last year. You know, if he was in for a play, it was bad at one point in the season. You know, do you think that's really how to look at this, as opposed to say, wow, he just didn't have it? Because I think he had potential, he had talent, still does. But what he doesn't have right now is trust in himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look back to 2016 when he was a rookie. I mean, he came along and he had flashes, and there was no reason to think that this guy can't be a, you know, above average cornerback in the NFL. And I think in 2017 he wasn't perfect by any means, but I think, you know, he wasn't the biggest liability on the Steelers defense. And somewhere along the way, you know, it seemed like he was coming into 2018 with a nice foundation built to continue his development. And then somewhere along the way, like you said, the confidence was gone, because you see so many times where you could just see him abandoning the technique. And a guy who has his athletic profile and physical profile, you know, if you just trust the technique, I mean, you're good enough and physical enough to get away with it. And for whatever reason, there were so many times where you saw him peeking into the backfield looking at the quarterback when he, you know, was playing a man, or he was doing things he shouldn't have been doing, or he was not trusting the technique, not trusting his get off, not trusting his press. And there were so many things that you know, I think were just a large portion of just him not really being on board with what's going on that caused him to have that downside. And I also don't want to give him up before, you know, he has the opportunity to work with Terrell Austin, because I think having that many defensive backs on one roster, having just one coach work with them is a huge thing. That's why you see so many teams have two O-line coaches, they have two DB coaches, they have an inside linebacker and an outside linebacker coach, because when you have so many players at a position, you need to have specialized attention. I think having Terrell Austin be back there working with the DBs as well as drew a blank on his name.
Daryl Drake? No, is that wrong?
That's oh, wow.
Bradley.
Bradley, thank you. I just completely lost the blank on it. Having the two of them back there working with each other, I think, will really help them give some more isolated attention to some of these guys. And granted, the most of them, and Terrell Austin has been a cornerback safety whisperer at points in his career. You know, the track record shows success for that when he's working in a positional capacity. So I think having the opportunity to have those corners work with him, I think, will only help. And I think that's, like I said, this year you're going to find out what Artie Burns is going to be. And I mean, if he ends up getting traded, I think that might be the best thing that ever happens to him, just due to the fact that sometimes a new atmosphere and a new place gives you the opportunity to kind of refresh your career. And he's still young. I mean, he's only 24, 25.
Yeah.
You know, so he's still young enough to make an impact and make that swing in his career. And I think the confidence thing is just the biggest part of it. You know, you can't be a non-confident cornerback. That's why you see all the top cornerbacks in the league. They're dogs. You know, they have that no one's going to beat me mentality. I'm the best in the game mentality. And you never really have felt that recently from Artie Burns. So I think if he can fix that up and, you know, get back to finding within himself to be a player, I think he still has potential in this league. I think the notion that he is washed up and done, he's too young and he's too new in the league yet to really say he's completely done and has no place in it. I know so a lot of people want these guys to be, you know, instant oatmeal and be done right away, but I just think it's too soon to automatically roll him out when he has flashed enough to make you think that there's something there to work with.
All right, and I'm fully prepared for your contingent of trolls to attack us in the commentary. I know that there's at least two of them who are consistent listeners, and we thank you for that, even despite what you're about to say. that will fire off on Artie Burns, because somebody will probably tell you that you're on Artie Burns' nuts. That's a new favorite comment of mine. I don't understand it, but maybe I don't even want to. Beside the point. Okay, I think that all makes sense. And I have said I think that this is Artie Burns' last shot. And I honestly believe it's a confidence issue with him. If that issue finds a way to resolve itself where he can trust what he's doing. While I am in no way, shape, or form am going to say he's going to be a top lockdown corner in the league, I think he can be a serviceable corner and someone that the Steelers can use, even if it's his backup. It doesn't mean he's. Technically, you know, you don't spend a first round draft pick on somebody who's going to pan out as a backup. So you know, down the road, I don't disagree that maybe a new spot, a new home for Artie Burns is the best thing for him. Because as long as he's in Pittsburgh, unless he changes track really severely, he will always have that bust label associated with him.
For sure.
Because of that first round status. Okay. So let us move on to our topic du jour, which is the safety group. And I'm pretty sure the Steelers have, six safeties on the roster right now. You've got P.J. Locke, Terrell Edmonds, Sean Davis, Jordan Dangerfield, who feels like he's been around for about 1,000 years, but is only 28 and really has only been around for three. Dravon Askew, Henry, Marcus Allen. Now, of this group, Sean Davis, Terrell Edmonds, clearly those are your top two guys. Those are the locks in my mind. We talked heavily and extensively about Sean Davis last year moving into a free safety position to play center fielder. When you look back at his season, how did that change? Was it a positive change for him, or was it not?
Yeah, I think 2018 was easily Davis's best year in the league. I think fans are going to be quick to point out that gaffe in the Chargers game where he jarred loose that interception, which turned into a touchdown with Keenan Allen. I think they hold on to that a little way too much, because I think when you look at that play specifically, you look at a guy who was in a position trying to make a play when his team needed him to, and he just happened to run into his own guy. Terrell Gaten alive for that. I don't think when it comes down to it in film the next day, I highly doubt that Bradley or Butler were sitting there screaming at Davis for that, because he was a guy trying to make a play. And I think that was kind of the story of his 2018. He was a much more efficient tackler. You know, his consistency tackling was always an issue. He came up and he missed way too many tackles. He missed too many plays up in the box. And I think the drop interceptions are going to be something that have marred his career thus far as well, because there's so many picks that he's just left on the field. But I think as a whole, I mean, he easily is the only safety that truly right now on the roster fits that free safety mold. But the way the Steelers use kind of a hybrid safety look anyway, they don't have a true center fielder in a lot of looks. Davis fits that mold as a hybrid really well, a guy who can drop back and is athletic enough to be able to hold it deep and also has the experience coming from the box. But I think his biggest issue over his entire career through college and so far in the NFL is he's never played back-to-back seasons very consistently at the same position, because he has such a versatile profile. So I think having him at free safety last year and really finding that home for him, I think that's where he should have started from the get-go. But for whatever reason, the Steelers were still so enamored in having Mike Mitchell play that role, which really, I think if you would have had Mike Mitchell be the strong safety and Davis be the free safety, there's a chance that Mike Mitchell might still be in Pittsburgh. You know, I think that would have been better profile fit for them. But I'm happy the Steelers have finally zeroed in at Davis being in that role. I think having him have an entire offseason, back-to-back years, trying to iron out that free safety role going into a contract year, I think realistically you're looking at a potential big step for Davis. You know, I think he showed enough last year. If he can just start tallying up a couple of those interceptions, you're looking at a safety who might be, you know, a very good back-end piece for the Steelers this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and it's interesting from my standpoint to see when I go through and I look through the news and I look through the different things that are said about the players at the end of the year. There was quite a swing on Sean Davis. Some people thought it was his worst year. Some people thought, as you did, it was his best year with the Steelers. Some thought it was just a slight drop off from prior years, or just a little bit better. It was all over the place. While I think part of that is it's hard to analyze safety play, and part of it is the lack of turnovers, which is what you really look for from a free safety, to be that center fielder. And that's not traditional for him. You know, that's not necessarily, as you said, he's more a hybrid type player. But do you think this season coming up, that part of his game, do you see that being something that the familiarity with the role again, being consistently in the same types of positions with the same teammate, because that tandem, you know, it there takes some symmetry between those two, you know, the free safety and the strong safety in communication, as well as that back end, which will now have a new piece in Steven Nelson. But do you think that he might be able to be more ball hockey?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think you look at 2017, the guy had 3 interceptions. You know, I think expecting him to have Troy Polamalu 7 interception type seasons is asking a lot, because Troy, quite frankly, there's very few guys in the league who can consistently put up those interception numbers. But if Davis can be between a 3 and a 4 interception guy, you know, 3 or 4 interception guy a year, I think that you're getting the production out of him you want. And I think 2017, I mean, he had 92 tackles and 3 interceptions. You know, I think that realistically is a stat line that you can come to see from him. Because, I mean, he led the Steelers defense in snaps last year. I think he's going to be up there in the top 2 or 3 again this year. And I think the production has been proven that he can make plays on the ball. It's just last year, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a standard whole receiver thing where he started thinking about the play ahead of it and just overthought the easy catches. But, you know, I think the Steelers' overall focus on trying to revamp turnovers this year is going to be a big part of what we see from Davis. And I think, you know, like I said, the previous production indicates he is capable of doing it. And I think, you know, like you said, having another guy, that having cohesion in your secondary, especially at the safety positions where you have 2 guys – so that's why you saw Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu do so well together, because they had that chemistry. Davis and Edmonds, I think, with another year to work at that spot, you know, because at this point last year, it was Davis and Burnett. You know, Edmonds wasn't getting any looks until the season came around, and Burnett was hurt, you know, 15 weeks or whatever felt like. But, you know, I think realistically, another year with Edmonds next to him, previous production indicating it. I don't see why 2019 can't be Davis's best year. and have a breakout year in that back end.
Yeah, and I mean, when I look at his 17 season and his 18 season, I understand why people can look at that and feel he had a bit of a backslide, because he went from 3 inch to a single inch. You know, you said he had 92 tackles. The stat page I'm looking at says 90, but I'm not going to quibble. And he dropped down to 80, you know, in 18. So it looks like he had slightly less production. But, you know, I think it was a bugaboo for the entire Steelers defense is you know, converting turnovers. And it's clearly an emphasis this year. I don't disagree with you. I think I like Sean Davis. I've liked him since they drafted him. I thought he had was a well-earned, you know, rookie of the year for the Steelers from the defensive side. And I kind of look at, you know, the fact that even coming in from Maryland, right, he's not been in the same position consistently. You know, he's been asked to do a lot of different things. So 2 seasons in the same position, doing the same things, I think, I mean, look, let's be honest. He needs to have a strong season to get a contract that he's going to want to get. He's got to ball out. If he doesn't, he may still get looks because he's been a consistent player, but he's not going to get that big-time contract he would like to get. I'm not saying he's going to get that regardless of what he does. But, I mean, if he blows up and has 8 interceptions, something crazy, you know, who knows? They may not be able to keep him. But I think 3-4 interceptions is a good year for him, a very good year, as a matter of fact, and would be dramatically improved in what the Steelers have been lacking in, which is turning the ball over. So I think he's a guy to look at. I don't think there's any question he makes the roster. And barring injury, is your day one starter at the free safety position. Which brings us to Terrell Edmunds. Now, Terrell Edmunds, the bust term is already, you know, and this is a guy who... I agree. It's ridiculous. I feel like, you know, if you're not a star in the first season, you're a bust.
Which I don't understand it. Like, these, so, like, especially at safety, like, everyone expected him to be Derwin James. If he's not Derwin James, he comes out there and is almost an all pro. He's a bust. And I don't get it. Sorry.
No, and I'm with you 100%. Joe and I talked about this recently, where you have to be somewhat realistic. Players take time to develop, and it feels like a fairly recent phenomenon that the expectation is a rookie will always come in, and if you're a first-round pick, you're going to come in, you're going to be an all-pro, a perennial all-pro, pro bowler, and light the world on fire, or you're a bust. But even then, you know, picking as late as the Steelers often do, you're talking about guys who are fringe second rounders to low first rounders in most cases, and those kind of expectations are just unrealistic. That being said, here's a guy that wasn't even expected to have to start because they had Morgan Burnett, and they were going to ease Terrell Edmunds into the position he was going to play and maybe play him in some sub-package ball and other things, rather than just throw him to the Wolves. But Morgan Burnett gets hurt, and he starts 15 games, plays in all 16, ends up with 78 tackles. I think he had 1 interception, I guess a fumble recovery. That's not a bust-type year. I mean, that's a good, solid starting year, and you can't, you know, despite the fact that he didn't light the world on fire, this is a mantra I keep preaching every episode, it feels like, he got better as the season got on. You know, he learned. He looked more comfortable. It was, you know, you didn't look at him and go, man, he's just not getting it. You looked at him and went, that's a guy who's getting better. Did you see something different than I did?
No, I mean, I think you look at so many rookies, even like TJ Watt to an extent. I mean, the rookie wall is a real thing because these guys – are used to playing, you know, at most like 12 games during college, and the snaps are so, there's no little snap counts compared to it in the NFL. You know, some of these guys hit a rookie wall. I remember Terrell Edmunds coming out, and he determined that he had already played more snaps through like that two-third point of the season that this year that he played his entire senior or junior year at Virginia Tech. You know, so you have a guy who played 966 defensive snaps, which is 92% of the defensive snaps. He played 223 special team snaps, which is about 50% of the special team snaps for the Steelers last year. And he got progressively better as the year went along. There was no rookie wall for him. And I think as a first-year safety, which is not an easy position just to come into and pick up, you know, expecting you to draft the next – like not every single player, especially at safety, turns into Derwin James. I'm just picking that out recency bias due to the fact that he lit the world on fire last year as a rookie safety, who realistically the Chargers got at 18. He should have never been outside the top 10. You're looking at a guy who fell and had no reason to fall. Edmonds, I think, coming in there, he kept getting better. I think you look at, like, the around the Chargers game on, he started making plays around the field. You know, he was coming up making big hits, forcing tackles, forcing fumbles, forcing flow outside for linebackers to come and clean up the play. I mean, I think from a just an overall positional standpoint, was he the best defender for the Steelers? No. I wouldn't call him a bust. I think his rookie year was better than Artie Burns' rookie year was, which I'm sure fans will say, well, that's like being the, you know, the tallest in the lot. But I think you look at guys like some of the previous quote-unquote busts that have been called in recent memory in Pittsburgh. I think you compare them to Bud Dupree. You compare them to Artie Burns, Jarvis Jones. I think you look at the statistics. He had a fantastic rookie season for all you can expect to get him. And I think that's a huge point moving forward. And, again, we're talking about a guy who wasn't even supposed to be the starter, you know, going into the season. And all of a sudden Morgan Burnett goes down with a nagging injury. And you have a rookie who's 21 years old coming into a spot starting in a defense that had no real expectations of starting and then has to start almost every game the entire season because of that and ends up doing very well. And I think when you look at the athletic profile, and I think you look at the makeup and how the Steelers use him and using his strengths to his advantage, I think you have a strong safety who can be a very versatile defender for you. I think a big part of why fans want to continue to call him a bust after one season of play is due to the fact that they didn't like the pick in the first place. And I think that's something that continues to go in the back of their head. And my argument to this always is going to be, it doesn't matter if your favorite Twitter person doesn't like the pick. It doesn't mean if you don't know anything about the player, you can't hate the pick. The fans hated the Deontay Johnson pick because they knew nothing about him, because you know all this stuff about DK Metcalf, you know all this stuff about Miles Boykin, you know all this stuff about Hakeem Butler. You don't know Deontay Johnson, so instantly you hate the pick. Terrell Edmonds was a guy at the end of the 2018 draft process that was being talked about as a potential first-round target, and the Steelers were named by multiple sources as a team that was interested in him. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, and he checked off all the boxes the Steelers look at. He was an underclassman. He was from a Power 5 school. He had all the athletic marks they looked at. He was productive all at Virginia Tech. You know, it shouldn't surprise anybody. And Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert both wine and dined him at his pro day. Everything indicated that Terrell Edmonds was going to be the pick, and there were multiple teams that had first-round, fringe, second-round grades on him. So it shouldn't be surprising at all. He was the guy, and I think if fans can get over that and get over their ego about the fact that maybe Terrell Edmonds was not that surprising of a pick just because you didn't know much about him and your favorite draft Twitter analyst said he has a third-round grade on him, doesn't mean that that guy's right and you should actually appreciate what he did on the field. I'm not saying Terrell Edmonds is there quite yet because he still does have a large rim amount of growth for him, but I think realistically you look at what he was able to do in 2018 and just the experience he gained, and really he wasn't a massive liability. I think you can point to multiple other pieces in the Steelers secondary that was a much bigger liability than Edmonds was. You have a guy who can come out there and hopefully perform at a higher level in 2019, and he could and should grow from that point and be a standout defender who sets the tone in that secondary.
Yeah, you know, Mike Tomlin likes to talk about the growth he expects from first to second year players being very big. You know, he expects somewhat exponential growth in their performance. And, you know, this is the thing that always stands out to me about Edmonds is his speed. He's so freaking fast. You know, he's physical and he's fast. And I think that once he again, completely trusts what he's doing, which I felt like he started to do near the end of last year, understands his responsibilities in the defense, and as they love to say, the game starts to slow down for him. I think, you know, it's not faint praise to say he can be a really dynamic playmaker. I mean, there were people that that our analysts out there that are throwing out Troy Polamalu type comparisons. And while I'm not ready to compare anybody to Troy Polamalu, because Troy is Troy, and that's the end of that story. You know, if you got somebody who's 1/10 of Troy in Terrell Edmunds, he's a potential Pro Bowler and possible All-Pro player. That's just how good Troy was, and I think that this guy can be really good in the position. I think he has all of the skills to be that way.
I completely agree. You know, I think he's a there's too many skills there and too many positives to his game coming out of Virginia Tech when we saw last year to not expect that he can be a high-end, high-caliber player for the Steelers defense. And like you said, people that try to compare guys to arguably one of the top five safeties to ever play the game in Troy Polamalu, you know, that's just – you can't do it. You know, I think there's a difference in their game, but I think he's an explosive player. He comes downfield in a hurry. And like I said, I think it was the Chargers game last year where I saw that play. He came down, and I want to say it was Austin Eckler was carrying the ball or someone, and he came down and just like a heat-seeking missile – just destroyed him. And like, those are the type of plays that you can expect to see from him, because he has gotten better as a tackler as the year went along. I think his downfield speed and closing speed and strength and pop he delivers on hits is going to be something that, you know, is going to be a huge presence in that box. And I think you add guys like, you know, Devin Bush into there, you have two guys, and then you add Sean Davis and Mark Barron and whomever, guys flying around in that box that are going to come down and hit you and pop you. That's terrifying. I think Edmunds can fit right into that mold, and if he can start putting together some interceptions on top of it, you know, some sacks, whatever, tackles for a loss, stuffing the box, you have a guy who can be a very productive player and, you know, potentially a Pro Bowl caliber player if he continues on the trajectory he is. There's too much to work with to not like Edmunds, in my opinion.
I'm only going to correct one thing you said, in that Troy Polamalu is the greatest safety of all time. but that's just me. And I don't care about all the Baltimore Ravens who are going to tell me it's Ed Reed. I don't care. I'll go 1A and 1B, but Troy's 1A. So, all right. I think, you know, it's clear this is your top two guys at the position. And this is, after you get past them, it's where it starts to get interesting. And I think where we could see, you know, most people are just going to say, oh, well, Jordan Dangerfield's been there forever. Jordan Dangerfield's going to be another guy. And Marcus Allen's been there. Marcus Allen's going to be another guy. That's your four safeties. I'm not ready to go there yet. You know, while we're never ready to go anywhere until, you know, you get to training camp and see what these guys produce, the other two safeties on this roster right now, P.J. Locke and Skew Henry, they have some intriguing potential. And, you know, there is certainly a chance that a guy who's been around forever and who's been a core special teamer, but when he has gotten the chance to be on the field, has not always looked like he belonged there in Jordan Dangerfield. I don't know that his position is safe and that he enters this as anything other than in the mix. So when you look at, let's start with Jordan Dangerfield, in my mind, again, this is a guy who, if needed, can play, but is going to be a drop off in talent considerably, from your top two guys, and can be a liability, but is a great special teams guy. He's been around a long time. Clearly he knows the defense. Clearly he knows the team, but do you view Dangerfield as the head-on favorite to be the number three, or do you think he's just in the mix?
Yeah, I don't view him as the guaranteed number three. I think, you know, last year he got a lot of dime backer looks. I do think that was his best role, was as a dime backer. I think beyond that, he kind of is a liability at the safety position. Obviously, there's no denying what he brings on special team. He's been a special team standout for them for, you know, a while now, and I think last year he was one of the top special team contributors on the team behind, you know, Tyler Matakevich, who's always seemed to be that guy. But I just think you look at the other spots they have on that defense, and I think it's not even just safety that's going to impact Dangerfield's role. You know, I think you have Marcus Allen creeping up behind him, who Mike Tomlin has not been afraid whatsoever to name drop as a guy they're hoping to see a lot from this year. And then you look at the fact that Mark Barron and Devin Bush are almost going to potentially create a lesser need for having multiple Dimebacker type profile guys on your roster. And if need be, Terrell Edmunds can also fill that role if you need to have him there. So is it really necessary if another guy comes up and can outperform him and contribute on defense? You can find special teams contributors throughout the roster. There's not, I'm not saying it's a wash position, but Dangerfield is getting older. I mean, he'll be 29 by the end of the season. He's never been a consistent contributor on defense, and I think he's reached his ceiling as a player. I like Dangerfield. I think he's always been a great presence in that locker room. But if you can find somebody that can replace him, I don't think his job is a lock by any means. I think it's closer to a lock than other prospects, like some of the undrafted guys they brought in. But I think if someone comes in and outperforms him, or he doesn't play up the par, I think sitting there just automatically writing him into a job just because he's been around for so long doesn't mean that it's necessarily the right thing. I mean, he had 75 defensive snaps last year over the course of the entire season. You know, that's hardly a guy who's contributed consistently enough. And again, I think the Steelers have talked highly about Marcus Allen, and obviously you want to see more from him before you make that decision. But I think you're going to have a pretty heated battle for that number three spot between Marcus Allen and Jordan Dangerfield. And I would be more inclined the Steelers are going to go with the younger blood who can still contribute on special teams if need be. You know, Dangerfield is a special teams ace, but he's not replaceable. Or he's not replaceable, in my opinion.
Gotcha. Now, you touched on Marcus Allen, and because I agree with you. You touched on Marcus Allen, and he got some defensive snaps. You got it in front of you. What did he tally last year?
18 defensive snaps, 12 special team snaps.
So that's not even much special teams play, but you know, I think this is a guy that they needed to groom. And you're right, Mike Tomlin name drops him a lot. And again, they expect a lot in second year development. From the limited amount of things you saw and what you know of Marcus Allen, there's even been talk of him as a Dimebacker or even a linebacker at times. What do you look at with him and feel like he's going to best be suited to do, and what's he going to bring to them this year?
Yeah, I think a big thing with him is the fact that he last year, I think fans were so quick to just look at this guy as a player who was inactive so he couldn't play, but he was under the radar injured a decent amount last year. I think that was kind of a known thing coming into the draft. I think that might have been part of why he was, fell as far as he did that, and the fact that he is kind of that strong safety Dimebacker role, which isn't highly sought after by a lot of teams. I think last year was more due to the fact that he was injured more than it was he was actually hurt. I think the fact that he is reportedly, by all accounts, healthy right now going into 2019, you have a strong safety build who can be a Dimebacker. I think his athletic profile is a hard-hitting, downhill player that can play in the box as an extra defender and play linebacker if need be. I don't think he's ever going to be the coverage guy you want. I don't think he was really used in that capacity at Penn State. I don't think he was really using that capacity last year during the preseason or whenever he was healthy. But I think, you know, he is a hard-hitting guy. He was another player. I was surprised he fell to the fifth round last year's draft. I think he's a talented player. And I think, you know, with the lack of depth the Steelers kind of have, lack of proven depth the Steelers have, he has a huge opportunity right now to get a lot of looks and a lot of reps. And, again, Mike Tomlin doesn't go out of his way name-dropping players, especially this early in the process, this consistent like he has with Marcus Allen. And I think realistically, he has the best opportunity just based on skill set to kind of fit into that number three first off the bench safety position behind Davis and Edmunds. I think he's a smart player. I think he's a passionate player, and I think he's liked by the team. And I see no reason why he can't, you know, come in and take 2019 as his opportunity to really stand out and make a name for himself.
Yeah, that's actually where I'm headed with this. I look at Marcus Allen, I think they know what they have in Jordan Dangerfield. And I think that it's clear that while he can be a special teams contributor, he's never going to be a real good game day option, as far as a starter goes. But I think Marcus Allen could potentially, give you an upgrade there. And, while there's not a lot to base that on other than his college playing career, you look at some of what he was able to do at Penn State, and you can see some of the potential. So I kind of agree with you. I go into this thinking, you know, it's Davis and Edmonds, and then maybe it's Marcus Allen, and maybe it's Jordan Dangerfield. But then I think that there is a chance in the last two guys that we're going to talk about. This is what I look at as it's kind of like a three dogs, one bone. I don't think they're going to keep more than four safeties because I think they have too many other intriguing prospects at other positions for them to go any deeper at safety than four. And that means that if you've got, you know, Davis and Edmonds and Allen, there's only one spot left, and you got three players who are going to be vying for it. And that's Jordan Dangerfield, PJ Locke, and Drayvon, maybe.
Drayvon Askew-Henry.
Yeah, Drayvon Askew-Henry. And
potentially Cameron Kelly, if you want to throw his name in the list.
That's true. You know, even though he's listed as a corner, he got, you know, he's a guy that I almost forgot about him. I'm glad you brought him up. He's a guy that could be in the mix as a hybrid. And that's because that's kind of how they used Askew-Henry at West Virginia, is it not? He played some corner at on slot receivers. He played safety. He may have even played dimebacker. I don't remember for certain, and I'm not a Mountaineers guy. I didn't watch much of their games. So, you know, this is where I think there's interest in this position is who's going to take those spots and how that battle plays out. If you're looking at what we'll now say is four guys, if you throw Kelly in the mix, throw out Dangerfield's past with the team. Where's the talent there, and who's the guy that you're most excited to see?
I think the one I'm most excited to see is twofold. I'm excited to see PJ Locke. I'm excited to see Cameron Kelly for two different reasons. One, I think Cameron Kelly kind of fits. I think he's the only other player in that safety crew they currently have that even resembles remotely close to a free safety. And I think, you know, his athletic profile gets put on this criticism very frequently due to the fact that he had a really lackluster 40 time at the combine in 2018, 2018. He doesn't exactly have, he's not a fluid, over-the-top fluid athlete, but I think that was trying to be looked at as a cornerback. When you're playing safety, it's good to be fluid. You don't have to be able to flip your hips as consistently as you do whenever you're playing corner because you're not on an island nearly as much. But I think he has the athletic profile and he has versatility, having played corner, having played safety. And I don't think it's an accident that he's been getting as many top-tier reps as he has been at OTA so far. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's just football and shorts. But if you remember, this is the first time he got a good look at Mike Hilton a couple years ago. You know, it was because the Steelers brought him on late in the process. They liked what they saw in him and gave him the opportunity to make some plays. And I think when you see, you know, reports coming out of Pittsburgh's facilities is that, you know, Sean Davis has been out with a little nagging injury going on. So, but, you know, there's other safeties on the roster that have more experience than Kelly, and Kelly's still the one getting the look at. And I don't think it's any accident that that's happening. And I think just writing it off as saying, well, it's just football and shorts during May and June doesn't mean anything. That it does mean something. The Steelers aren't just handing out their reps to guys with the starting defense just because they want to. So I think having Kelly in that position is going to be an opportunity to see if he can come in and be a contributor in any fashion, because he did have some decent tape to look at when he was at the fleet last year in the AAF. But I'm excited to see him. And I think PJ Locke is just another kind of compact downhill safety prospect who, you know, we've seen with guys like Ryan Clark almost, which is, you know, ironic due to the fact that that's the guy who he kind of reached out to and had a mentor in a little bit after he signed with the Steelers. You know, you turn on highlights of PJ Locke and it's like watching an MMA fight, you know, watching him come downhill and just absolutely abuse these ball carriers is so much fun to watch. But, you know, that can come off as almost reckless too many times, and some of those plays would be heavily flagged or fined in the NFL. So, but I think his experience at Texas, you know, he has a lot of playing experience and a lot of starting experience down there. I think, you know, his versatility and just his ability to be a decent athlete in space, I think is going to give him an opportunity to make some plays there. And I think the two of them are the two I'm the most excited to see, because I think you have an opportunity there. If they were to keep five and Dangerfield were to be pushed off, I think they're the two most likely candidates. I like Drayvon Askew-Henry a lot. I got the chance to watch him when he was at Aliquippa, right outside of Pittsburgh. but I think there's too many inconsistencies with his game right now. His angles are almost painful to watch. He doesn't always close with the most vicious play speed you'd like to see from a safety. He's not the best athlete by any means. He doesn't have the frame to match a guy like Cameron Kelly. So I like Askew Henry, but if I had to rank my guys, he would be easily at the bottom of that list, in my opinion. I'm looking forward to seeing Cameron Kelly and PJ Locke with this year in the training camp and preseason.
I think you make a good point that can't really be understated, in that the Steelers are not just saying, okay, let's just give this guy reps because why not? Because they have plenty of guys who can take reps with the first team. You know, if Sean Davis isn't playing, there are guys who can take those reps that are in the room and have been in the room. Jordan Dangerfield, for example, or a new guy like Marcus Allen, who they expect to grow. The fact that Cameron Kelly is getting those reps is kind of a hint at how much they're excited about that player. So, I totally brain farted that. So I knew there was another guy that I was forgetting, and he wasn't listed as a safety. But I agree. I mean, I think Kelly's listed as a DB, which just indicates you don't know what you're going to do with him yet. But you know, that puts it in a because I thought there were seven guys instead of six that I was going to look at here. So I kind of agree with you here. When I add Kelly into the mix, I do kind of wonder. Let me ask you this. Does Jordan Dangerfield have any value at all? In other words, is there any other team is going to say, we're short on safeties? Is he any value, or they just go, if you're going to cut him, we'll wait. We're not giving you even a seventh rounder for him.
I, in my opinion, don't think he has enough valuable starting. Teams don't trade for special teams players. And as much as I like Jordan Dangerfield, I don't think he has done enough on the Steelers defense on a consistent basis to warrant a team being interested in trading for him. You know, if it was a player that was a recent draft pick, who was a higher round draft pick, or a guy who you've at least seen, like Artie Burns, who has at least been a starter and has that experience, you know, there's trade value. With Jordan Dangerfield, I don't think there'd be much explicit interest. I don't think he's necessarily gone. I just think that, like you said, you know what you get with him, and I think that's a guy who knows the system on your depth chart, and who's going to be a solid special teams contributor, but probably not going to be much more than that. Because of that, I don't think there would be a whole lot of trade interest from teams. I mean, the guy's been on and off the practice squad or IR for what feels like 15 years now. So I would be surprised if there was any market for him other than just cut him and then see if he lands somewhere, if it came to that point. I'm not saying it is going to come to that point, but you never know.
Yeah, I look at this as one of those situations where it wouldn't surprise me if they said, you know, he got called into Tomlin's office and he said, look, we're going to move in another direction, but stay in shape, because we're going to, you know, if we need to come to you, we're going to. Because they've done that in the past with players. And, you know, look, Dangerfield's, I think, 28. Maybe he'll be 29 when the season starts. Maybe not. You know, but I think when you can drop, you know, and get younger at a position, sometimes that's a good thing, especially if it's also going to give you a boost in talent. And I think if you take the experience factor out of this, I think Kelly and Locke and even Askew Henry may have more talent than Jordan Dangerfield has. And that sometimes in and of itself can mean it's good enough to make a move, because you increase the overall talent level of your team. But experience also counts, and the special teams play counts. And, you know, he is a, you know, a guy that – it's funny. You know, we talked about this in the linebacker show, where I said I think that it's possible that Tyler Matakevich doesn't make this team. And I think that the only thing that gets him on this team is his special teams play, because he's been a fantastic special teams player. But that's it. That's his ceiling as far as I'm concerned. He looks out of place when he has to play as a starter, or even, you know, a substitute. And, you know, he just isn't that guy. As smart as he is and as knowledgeable of a football player is, his talent level just isn't good enough. And, you know, you because special teams is an important part of the game, much more important than people sometimes give it credit for, yeah. There is something to be said for making sure you've got good special teamers. But it becomes a numbers game. And sometimes if you're gonna try and sack, you know, move people away and keep talent that you're worried isn't going to be able to clear waivers or get to the practice squad or is going to get picked off the practice squad, they may end up as guys on special teams. And that sometimes leads to having bad special teams. But at least until these guys get some experience and play, you know. But the Steelers right now in a lot of positions that are usually feeders for special teams – have a lot of guys with talent. They just don't know yet what they can become. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if some of the guys who've been core special teamers are going to be able to count on their role being there just because of that with, you know, new youth coming in. So I think Jordan Dangerfield is in that position in my mind. And I think it'll be telling to see if some of these other young guys start to get snaps on special teams, you know, in the preseason and are playing extensively in the starting defensive roles in preseason when probably, you know, even though we say, okay, the starters are playing, a lot of them aren't. But are getting, you know, as Tomlin would call it, varsity snaps versus JV snaps. Because we get really excited when guys perform at the JV level. You know, but it's the JV level. You know, they're going against, you know, second tier players. And sometimes when you're just better than those guys, you perform really well. Doesn't mean you're good enough to play varsity ball. It means you're better than most JV guys. So I think this is it's an interesting battle to watch. And I was going to play the, you know, the old Rodney Dangerfield get no respect at all clip. But, I, you know, YouTube's mad enough at us. I don't want to give him any other reason to be yelling. So I figured we can just say that. Look, it's not that I don't have any respect for Jordan Dangerfield. It's not that I don't appreciate what he was able to contribute to the team. I question whether he can survive the array of talent that's now projected to be in that room. Doesn't mean he won't, because, you know, sometimes guys rise or other guys fall. You know, maybe as they say, the stage is too big for the young guys right now. If you're looking at that group, because they all, other than Dangerfield, who I don't think has any practice squad eligibility, the rest of them all would. Do you think there's a guy in that room that you'd look at and go, yeah, he's probably just not going to be around? Or are all of them guys that either, if you don't think they're going to make the 53, probably end up on the practice squad?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of them have a shot. I think that with the unproven talent that's behind Davis and Edmonds, as you said earlier, they're the only real two locks. I think Marcus Allen is pretty as close to a lock as you can possibly get at this point. I think Dangerfield, Askew, Henry, Locke, and Kelly are all kind of fringe players that are all going to be kind of duking it out for what's going to end up either being one or two spots, depending on how many safeties the Steelers choose to keep. I agree. I think four is more likely, but I think five is also a potential number because they've seemed to have kept five oftentimes in years in the past. So, again, maybe it's just my preference. I like Draymond Askew, Henry, but I think when you look at his skill set compared to the other guys there, I think he has – a lesser chance. And I'm, again, you know, backtracking on Dangerfield, I don't think it's that Dangerfield shouldn't be on the roster. I think when you look at just an experience standpoint, easily he has earned a spot on this roster, but there is a fine balance to roster building between guys who have experience and guys you want to get experience. And, you know, his special teams prowess can't be denied, but who's to say that you bring in another safety that can't do the same thing on special teams? I mean, right. You know, there's always going to be turnover on special teams. You know, very seldom do you see a guy like DHB who's a consistent contributor for 6 years, 7 years on special teams as a gunner, and then all of a sudden is gone. So, and I understand if you end up getting rid of Medikevich? Do you also want to get rid of Jordan Dangerfield? There's a lot of points going along there that you don't want to have too much turnover on special teams. But I think Walk is a very, at this point, before you actually see live game action, because right now we're all just guessing.
Yep.
Until you actually see action during the training camp and preseason. But I think Locke is a potential special teams or a potential practice squad guy. And I think potentially Kelly might sneak his way on there as well if it comes down to it. I think those two, if they don't make the 53, will be guys you'll see in that capacity. I don't believe Dangerfield has any more special teams eligibility. I know there's been some hit and miss because I think he has three accrued seasons at this point, maybe two. It's hard to keep track of his years to date, but he, I don't think he has any eligibility. So that might be a point to want to keep him around for another year and let one of these other younger guys that are undrafted free agents get some reps on this, on the practice squad and get, you know, another year in the system. But I just think if you're at all excited about one of these guys and you know what you have from Dangerfield, I'd rather upgrade my safety depth and figure out how to work, figure out special teams after that. And keep a special teams contributor on there, but have lackluster safety depth. You know, I'm always going to put the depth of the core offense and defense over the depth of the special teams because there's always going to be guys you can move around different capacities to put together special teams. You can only have so many safeties on your roster. So I think if you know, PJ Locke comes out and outperforms Dangerfield on defense, I think that's going to get him a spot over Dangerfield being a special team ace. And I could be wrong. I mean, for Dangerfield's sake, I hope he stays around. I like him. He's been one of my underlying Steeler crushes for a couple years now. I've always been happy when he stuck around, but I don't think he's a lock by any means. And I think Askew Henry is probably has the biggest uphill climb to get to that point. But I think PJ Locke and Cameron Kelly have a really good chance of making some noise and pushing for either a roster spot or a practice squad spot this year.
Yeah, I really, as I said, I really don't think they're going to keep more than four. I think there's just too many other positions where they have talent that could end up elsewhere and may not be able to be snuck onto the practice squad that I think they'd like to explore. But I could be wrong, and the reason that I say that is if there's a fifth one kept, I would assume it's going to be Cameron Kelly at this early stage, simply because he may have more position flexibility than some of the other guys in that room. But you know, it all comes down to what they do in the preseason and what they do in camp, and how they perform. You know, I think that the point we're trying to drive home here is that for guys like PJ Locke and Cameron Kelly and Askew Henry, there's a position there, but they have to take it. You know, they have to show that it's their position to earn it. And I think probably only one of them does that. If any of the three, if Dangerfield manages to survive, and makes the 53 because of his special teams play and what he can contribute there and his leadership in the locker room, I think you're right. Two out of those three guys, I think, go on the practice squad or are at least offered practice squad positions, because just offering it doesn't mean they have to take it. You know, and then the third is probably gone. And right now in my ranking, it's probably exactly the same as yours. I think Askew Henry is the least likely or has the biggest hill to climb. And it's, you know, look, I was a big Ryan Clark fan. So now PJ Locke has a little piece of my heart because he talked about Ryan Clark, and you know, I miss that physicality out of the safety position. I miss guys getting knocked blankety blank out. Even though it's not safe, even though it's not politically correct, I'm just old school that way. I like seeing big hits. So you know, I got a little bit of a pre-camp crush on PJ Locke. And I hope that he makes the roster, but we'll all have to wait and see. So, anything else on your mind about this group, or anything else that you know, since you haven't had a platform to speak recently, that you'd like to say?
No, I think this safety battle is going to be one of the more enjoyable ones to watch this year. I'm actually, stay tuned. I'll be doing a write up on it here soon. But I think, of all the positions, inside linebacker's going to be fun, but you kind of have an idea because I think the top three spots are basically a lock, so there's not really as much fun with that. at safety beyond Davis and Edmonds, there's no guarantees. It's going to come down to just straight up performance and how these guys perform during training camp and during the preseason. I think that's going to be extremely fun to watch, because I think whoever ends up making the roster at safety, you're going to see some decent reps throughout the year, either as a contributor on defense or on special teams. So I think whoever ends up making the roster is going to have a important job for the Steelers this year. And I think it's going to be really fun to sit back and watch. And there's a lot of physical guys that are in this group. I think they're going to create some sparks during the first live action they get during August preseason game. So I'm excited for it. I'm looking forward to seeing how this battle shakes out.
Yep. June and July cannot go by fast enough.
No, no.
Not to mention the fact that July's just too darn hot. I don't like it. Okay. Well, Zach, I appreciate you taking the time. Let them know how they can follow you, find you out on the interwebs before we let you go.
Yeah, you can get me at Twitter at GZSports_ZM. Always looking forward to talk.
Excellent. And for those of you who follow Steel City Underground, if you want to give me a follow at Cannons Don't Thun, you can even ask me why that's my handle if you want. I've explained it before. I'm not doing it again. But I will if you wanted to ask me via Twitter. Then I'll tell you. If not, I think that is going to wrap this episode of the Steel City Underground podcast. We appreciate the listens. We appreciate the subscriptions. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification button. If you're on YouTube, if you're on another platform, let us know what you're thinking. Keep the comments coming. Try and keep them clean so Joe's happy. And that'll be about it. So until next time around, my name's Brian. His name's Zach. And as I always like to say, it's chaos out there, so be kind.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.